call the president. President, we need the National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from there.
Yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. Coming straight from the side, going down right here on the Freedom Train Network. Audio Shop Talk coming straight to your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly, Joseph Ward. And I feel good today. Welcome to this fantastic, freaking, faithful Friday right here on the Fix Sports Podcast. As I get it in, keep it in, and gonna do my thing today, because it's Friday and I got a lot of topics to get to you. But hey, check this out. As you know, Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants, and On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through their African History book series, the African History blog series, the African History curriculum app, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, a nonprofit organization, as well as speaking engagements, lectures, educational classes, anything in the educational realm, whether it's digital or face-to-face, On the Shoulders of Giants can deliver it to you. And all you have to do is visit www.ontheshoulders1.com or www.ontheshoulders.org to learn more about On the Shoulders of Giants, read the blogs, learn more about African history, and also to learn more about the nonprofit organization, www.ontheshoulders1.com for the blog, and www.ontheshoulders.org, for the nonprofit organization. And, you know, you can follow your homeboy on Twitter at JoeWard84. Follow your homeboy. Follow the Freedom Train on Twitter at Freedom Train Net. Follow Freedom Train on Instagram at Freedom Train Network, Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Radio Republica, Facebook, YouTube, all of that. Freedom Train Network. Holla at your homies. And it goes down. It goes down. Remember, the month of August on the Freedom Train Network is our Mental Health Awareness Month, so we're dedicating our shows to make sure that we bring some type of light to mental health awareness. And the Freedom Train Podcast series, the title show on the network, is actually conducting interviews throughout the month focused on mental health awareness. So, you know, www.freedomtrainradio.com for this On the Shoulders of Giants. Freedom Train Network stuff right upside your head. Freedom Train Network, Freedom Train Network, Freedom Train Network. That's what I'm talking about right now. But shout out to On the Shoulders of Giants. Let me give y'all my rundown. What we're going to talk about today on this faithful, freaky, fantastic Friday. So our HBCU spotlight, we're looking at the Hall top HBCU top FCS All-American team. That's actually what we're looking at, not just the HBCU, but HCS. But it's a whole bunch of HBCU players, so we're going to shout them out. LeBron loves colored women, and white women don't like that. So LeBron sent out an Instagram post the other day talking about he loves colored women, and white women mad at him. So we're going to talk about that. The NFL preseason is here. I told y'all I smell football in the air. It's here. Football is here. So I'm going to give y'all an update on the NFL preseason. And then Donald Trump, his punk ass mad because you still had players who protested. Because remember the anthem protest, desist order, whatever, has been suspended. So the players can actually protest right now without penalty. So Donald Trump got a problem with that. So we're going to talk about agent short staff.
The NFL is thinking about creating a TO rule for the Hall of Fame, so I'm going to tell you about that. There's something called the Alliance of American Football, and it's coming real soon, so I'm going to read some information about that. The NCAA is looking as has made changes to its rule book in the wake of the FBI investigations. I want to go through an article and we kind of look at the effects of CTE on mental health and then relate that to our community. The Las Vegas Aces, they forfeited a game and they ended up taking an L for that fourth or the cancellation of that game, so they had to forfeit it. So, talk about the latest run-in between Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton Thursday night before the game between the Carolina Panthers and the Buffalo Bills. And our weekly rant is aimed at the NCAA and possibly these players, because it's 13 UNC, University of North Carolina players who are suspended for selling the team issue shoes. So let's get into it. So our HBCU spotlight. Hey, so we have the FCS All-American team, and these are the top players from the MEAC and the SWAC, as well as Tennessee State and Hampton, heading into the 2018 season. So this is the first team offense. We have Lamar Raymond for North Carolina A&T at quarterback. Running back, Marquel Cartwright from North Carolina A&T. Another running back is P.J. Simmons from Alcorn State. A wide receiver is Elijah Bell from North Carolina A&T. Another one is Jaquez Ezzard from Howard. That's a wide receiver. We have a tight end, Jordan Jones from Grambling. We have an offensive tackle, offensive lineman William Waddle from Grambling. We have an offensive lineman Thomas Burton from Tennessee State. Offensive lineman Dwayne Brown from Bethune-Cookman. Offensive lineman Marcus Pettyfoot from North Carolina A&T. And offensive lineman Mustafa Ibrahim from Alcorn State. The defense, first team preseason FCS defense, is D lineman Stephon Banks from Savannah State, D lineman Le Allen Clark from Grambling. One time for that name, Le Allen. That's one of the greatest names ever. You know he's going to be a good lineman. He got to make it to the NFL with a name like Le Allen. He got to make it to the NFL. That's just an NFL lineman name, Le Allen, like Bakhtiari. You know, that's an NFL lineman name. So, like your name, Butch, something like that. You know, Le Allen, yeah. So, another defensive lineman is Malachi Washington Jr. from Morgan State. Then we have defensive lineman Vernon Molin from Alabama State. Then we have linebackers D'Arius Christmas from Grambling State. He got to make it to the league. That's another football name, D'Arius Christmas. That's a football name. He got to get it. That's like a lead your team and tackles name right there. So, then we got another linebacker, Patrick Harbin from Mississippi Valley. Then we have a linebacker, Rico Kennedy from Morgan State. Then we have DBs, Franklin Mack McCain III from North Carolina A&T. We have DB Javen Morrison from Alcorn State. We have DB Devonta Reynolds from North Carolina Central. Then we have DB Alex Brown from South Carolina State. The kicker is Marco Oronzo Cole from Grambling State. The punter is Jamie Gillen from University of Arkansas Pine Bluff. And the the long snapper or whoever RS or whatever is a return specialist. I guess return specialist is Marcus Taylor from Norfolk State. So that's the first team. The second team offense starts with quarterback Kalen Newton from Howard, Cam Newton's brother. And then we get to Cam Newton a little later in the show. Running back Isaiah Tolton from North Carolina Central. Running back Devin Bowers from BAMU. Wide receiver Stephen Newbold from Tennessee State. Wide receiver Quinn Matt Elfrich from Mississippi Valley, tight end Josh McCoy from North Carolina Central, offensive lineman Marley Connolly from North Carolina Central, offensive lineman Obinna Nkwaku from FAMU, offensive lineman Nick Leverett from North Carolina Central, offensive lineman Corbin Finielson from Prairie View A&M, and offensive lineman Philip Norman from Bethune-Cookman. Second team defense is D lineman Nigel Davis from Norfolk State. Defensive lineman Darrell Johnson from North Carolina A&T. D lineman Sam Blue from North Carolina A&T. D lineman Tashard Charity from University of Arkansas Pine Bluff. Linebackers are Trey Farrell from Alcorn State, Julian Marcanti from Texas Southern, and Blair Edwards from Tennessee State. Our defensive backs are for the second team are Kimondre Abram from North Carolina A&T, Brian Cook from Howard, Demario Houston from Southern, and Vincent Sellers from Tennessee State. Kicker is Noel Ruiz from North Carolina A&T. The punter is Fidel Romo Martinez from Delaware State. And the return specialist is Devon Johnson from Tennessee State. So that is your FCS, which is more like a HBCU, preseason All-American first and second team. So you know how we do from the Fix Sports Podcast to Tallahassee, Florida, to all the way around the world to you, Miami State. So, one time for the first team, second team, all FCS preseason team for football. Football is in the air. 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 So what's time for those gentlemen? And I hope y'all ball out this year. And Allen and De'Arian, y'all got to make it to the league. All right, so let's move on like Maya. So LeBron James, I was scrolling through social media the other day, and the post that the person put up was perfect. LeBron James broke the internet again, and he broke it celebrating a milestone, if you will. So Beyonce, she's on the cover of, I think, Vogue is the magazine, and she got a she had somebody, she's on the cover of Vogue, and she had, you know, the first black photographer in the history of Vogue. And once again, how the fuck you just not the first black photographer? But we know that, because they don't like black photographers like that. So that happened, and LeBron James put out a tweet that said, "Nothing in this world is more powerful than colored women. Thank you all for continuing not to settle and setting great examples in life. So many looking up to you for inspiration / guidance and love. My daughter is watching. # woman power." White women got mad. So this is the article. That's the Instagram post. Let me read the article. LeBron James is all about positivity and uplifting others these days. On Wednesday, he decided to celebrate the many black women who are on the cover of coveted September issues of magazines, including the likes of Beyonce, Rihanna, Tracy Ellis Ross, and more. Like you said, nothing in this world more powerful than colored women. Thank you all for continuing to not settle and set great examples in life for so many looking up to you for inspiration / guidance and love. My daughter is watching # woman power. Right? White women got mad. White women got mad. And I like it. So, continue with the article. Of course, those who are not a part of the Black Girl Magic Squad have something to say, of course. It's been my reality. All women have endured oppression. He's a huge public figure in the U.S. I wish he used his status for all women, and he didn't. Okay, so that was a white girl reply. So, from now on, I'm going to have a little white girl voice. Edgar, let me read this to you. You can love yourself and not put down other women of other races. And guess what? There are women that are more than just black and white women. So please don't pretend that only white women would be insulted by this. It's sad that you all now do to others what you didn't want done to yourselves. We're all children of God and equal in the eyes of the Lord. All women are powerful if they choose to be. Now, shut up, white woman who wrote, whoever wrote this, shut up. A black man acknowledging black women is not the same as a white woman screaming rape and getting the whole town burnt down. It's not the same as a white woman accusing Emmett Till of whatever and him getting murdered, you know. It's not white lies. It's not white crocodile tears. White women are insecure. Those white women who are racist are insecure and have a God complex. And if you're not a white, if you're listening to this and you're not a white woman who is not racist, then you shouldn't be offended by that statement But if you are, that's your problem. But white women who are racist, who subscribe to white supremacy, have a God complex, and have issues with their self-esteem. I mean, hey, back to my white woman voice. I'm sure he didn't mean anything bad, and he just used wrong wording. Used the using the most means there's nothing equal or better, aka it's lesser. If he said so powerful or something, it would be an awesome post celebrating colored women without diminishing others. Shut up, white girl. Imagine if a white guy posted this about white women. Nobody would give a fuck. Why is it about colored women? Please, someone tell me how colored women are any better than white women. All women who set good examples and are good parents and great people and great women. Singling out color to make them sing better as opposed to non-colored women is a shame. You say colored women are powerful, but then using the hashtag of women powerful. You're not advising, you're not advertising women power. I don't talk about one race of women. Fix these moments, please. You see how she did it? You see how she did it? Fix these moments. Shut up, kiss butt cheeks, white women who got a problem with that. And see, that's the thing. White women tears, white crocodile tears, that white low self-esteem and all this things there. Everybody should bow down. They don't like to be this. If you don't include racist white people and stuff, they got a problem. If that man wants to empower just black women, it's okay. Just like when women only empower women, how men don't have a problem with it, and if a man do got a problem with it, that's their issue. So if just like when the LGBTQ community only empower the LGBTQ community, right? So if black people want to only acknowledge and empower black people, that's our goddamn business. And if y'all white women got a problem with it, that's y'all got that bit. Don't nobody give two flying fucks. Cry two tears in the bucket. Fuck it, white women. Let's take it to the stage. I am Becky Payne Stowling, and I am mad at LeBron James for not acknowledging me. Oh, my goodness. He ain't acknowledging my beautiful white skin and my golden hair and my eyes. Oh, my Lord, look at my eyes. And LeBron James missed out on that. How can he? How can LeBron just don't acknowledge me and all of my whiteness? Shut up, Becky Pan Strummy. Shut up. Don't nobody give two flying fucks about how y'all feel and getting mad because the man use his platform to empower black women. Yeah, that's what he's supposed to do. He's supposed to use his power to his platform to empower black women. Right? He ain't Michael Jordan and the other boys. He ain't the athletes that we grew up with because, you know what, I came to the realization the other day. The athletes that I grew up loving and watching, when it comes to social issues and bearing the social change, we can't count on them. They not those dudes. They're really not those dudes. So, yeah, we enjoyed y'all on the field, but off the field, ooh, we can't look up to y'all. Because if we just look up to them, racism just run rampant and nobody would say a damn thing about it. So, LeBron, man, if I was LeBron, I'd drop a new pick every day if I was LeBron. That's just me. Because I'd be like, man, fuck y'all. Y'all ain't going to do shit about it. So he shared pictures from Beyonce on the cover of Vogue and Laura Harrier or Harrier, some black girl, a black lady on the cover of Style magazine. Yep, so white women are butt hurt, and guess what? Who gives a fuck? Raise your hand if you give a shit that white women are mad at LeBron for praising black women. Raise your hand. I want to see hands. No hands? Right. Let's move on. Fuck out of here. Fuck out of here. See? Get the fuck out of here. So, are you ready for some football? The NFL is back. Who's boycotting and who's not? all I know is I'm reporting everything that's going on. I'm going to do my best in all of the realms of my abilities. Yeah, I said abilities. In all the realms of my abilities to report all the good stuff that's going on. I got that's my duty to let y'all know, keep y'all up to date on what's going on with this NFL. So I'm not going to watch all the time. I'm going to be real with you. I'm not going to watch all the time, but I'm going to watch a little bit. Because I want to know what's going on. I want to keep up what's going on. I want to be one of the people who document it, because it needs to be documented in the right way. So Thursday night, last night, we had some NFL preseason games. So I had to work late, and then I fell asleep. But I got a chance to see a little bit of the Browns versus the Giants. The Browns versus the Giants, and I saw Baker Mayfield throw a nice touchdown pass to, I think it's Antonio Callaway, I think it's the first name, from Callaway, the receiver from Florida. Callaway housed it. It was a slant, and Baker Mayfield placed that bit just right, and Callaway got it, took that bit to the house. So that was nice. But Baker Mayfield had a good game, and Tyrod Taylor had a good game. Right? So, I mean, it was nice. It was a nice game. So, Baker Mayfield went 11 for 20, 220 yards. He had two touchdowns. No picks. Tyrod Taylor went 5-5, 99 yards and a touchdown. B. Robeck, he went 2 for 4, 22 yards, nothing. So, the Giants, Webb went 9 for 22, 70 yards. A. Tanny went 3 for 7, 49 yards. Eli Manning went 4 for 7 for 26 yards. So, rushing for the Browns, M. Days had 13. He was 3 carries for 13 yards. Baker went 3 for 13. Nick Chubb went to the Browns. So, Nick Chubb had 15 carries for 11 yards. Hilliard had 8 carries for 9 yards. Duke Johnson had 1 carry for 3 yards. For the Giants, Barkley had 5 carries for 3 yards. Barkley had this nice-ass run where he kind of tried to dip into the hole, but he couldn't really get into the hole, so he dipped back out the hole, kind of set his blockers up, then dipped back into the hole and shot up in that bitch like a cannon and hit that sideline. So Barkley might be nice, man. So Martin had 5 carries, 39 yards. Jay Simmons had 7 carries, 38 yards, yada, 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 yada. As far as receiving, Tony O'Callaway had 7 receptions, 87 yards and a touchdown. Higgins had 5 catches, 66 yards. Njoku had 3 catches, 46 yards. Landry had 2 catches, 36 yards. You know, yada, 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 yada. You know, I ain't going to go all the way into the stats. But the Browns beat the Giants 20-10. And I just gave you the stats on that game because that's the game I actually watched. But the Panthers met the Bills, and the Panthers beat the Bills 28-23. The Bengals beat the Bears 30-27. The Buccaneers beat the Dolphins 26-24. And, you know, this is just week one. So week three is where it really go down. So week three is where I really come in. I probably, the next episode 31 that you're going to get on Monday is the season finale. So we'll see where we're at by week three, because I might give y'all a special show on the week three preseason, just focus just on NFL preseason to get ready for the season. So, of course, you know, the Browns beat the Giants 20-10. Steelers beat the Eagles 31-14. Saints beat the Jaguars 24-20. Patriots beat the Redskins 26-17. The Ravens beat the Rams 33-7. The Packers beat the Titans 31-17. The Texans beat the Chiefs 17-10. 49ers beat the Cowboys, yes, 24-21. And some of the 49ers players protested during the anthem. And the Colts beat the Seahawks 19-17. So there are some games today. So a game just started not too long ago, the Falcons and the Jets. And then at 10:30, the Lions play the Raiders. And on Saturday, the Broncos play the Vikings at 9:05 p.m. And the Chargers play the Cardinals at 10 p.m. So those are things to look out for. But, you know, like I said, Tyrod Taylor had a good game. He had a very, 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 you know, decent game. So did Baker Mayfield. So, like, I'm looking at some clips and stuff now that they're showing. And this is, God damn it, I lost my place. What's this clip? Come on. Oh, shoot. What's this clip? All right, this is this wrong goddamn clip. Wrong clip. And, never mind. Anyway. But it was a good preseason game, good NFL, and it went down how it's supposed to go down. So, yeah. NFL is back. Okay, I got my clip. I got the clip up. So it's Tyrod throwing to Jarvis Landry. So Tyrod threw a nice back shoulder pass to Jarvis Landry, and he caught it over Jackrabbit, Janoris Jenkins of the Giants. So it was a three-step drop. He stepped into it, took the hit. Great ball placement on the back shoulder. Basically, Landry won that at the line because Jenkins didn't even get his hands on him. He got the good back shoulder pass. Bam, he got it in there. So that's just a little clip they showed of Tyrod Taylor throwing that thing in there. But, you know, like I said, as the preseason progress, I'll give you more information about the NFL and what's going on. So during or after the games, Donald J. Shortstab got his panties all in the bind because the players protesting. He mad that players are protesting. He still understands because, you know, he got a vendetta against the NFL and he support white supremacy. All that, right? So he got mad and he's sending out tweets and stuff like he always do because he a bitch. Yeah, the president of the United States is a full-fledged bitch boy ho-ho. So President Donald Trump rallied against NFL players who protested at Thursday night's preseason games, saying the players are outraged about something that most of them are unable to define. So is he. He's talking about himself because every player who they've asked why they're protesting has clearly and precisely articulated that point. So clearly Trump is just being a bitch about this whole situation. So this is what he's saying. The NFL players are at it again, taking a knee when they should be standing proudly for the national anthem. Numerous players from different teams wanted to show their outrage at something that most of them are unable to define. They make a fortune doing what they love, he tweeted from his Bedminster golf club on Friday morning, the ninth day of his vacation. Nobody give a fuck about his vacation. I hope he got fucking goddamn I hope he constipated up there. Fuck him. On Thursday, as the preseason games officially kicked off, several players took a knee, raised a fist, or did not take the field while the national anthem was played before a dozen preseason games across the country. NFL players have said protests, which began in 2016, are intended to draw attention to what they see as systematic bias, systematic racism, what they're saying, systematic racism, and unjust killing of black people in America. I'll be trying to twist these people's words, goddamn CNN. Fuck y'all. So it's not necessarily about the anthem. That's where everybody's messing up. Tennessee Titans star defensive end Jarrell Casey told CNN last month, the way that the justice system treats minorities is an issue that we have. See, we got to learn our words. It's not the way the justice system treats minorities. It's the way the justice system treats black people. Right? We got to be specific. When you're talking about minorities, because a minority is everybody who's not a white, Protestant, straight male, closeted, down-low white male, right? So we got to be careful with that word. So Trump has previously expressed an understanding of the reasoning behind the protest. I'm going to ask all of these people to recommend to me because that's what they're protesting. People that think they're unfairly treated by the justice system, Trump told reporters in June before boarding Marine One. And I understand that, and I'm going to ask them to recommend to me people that were unfairly treated, friends of theirs or people that they know about, and I'm going to take a look at these applications. Trump, bitch, shut up. And if I find and my committee finds that they're unfairly treated, we will pardon them or at least let them out. All right. A lot of these black folk dead, bitch. Fuck is you talking about, Trump? Unjust killings, man. A lot of these black folks dead. But if you want a list of black folk who was unjustly jailed, let's start with our political prisoners. We got a list that they can send your ass. So the president sees the issue as a political winner using the protest to fire up his base. He told attendees of a private dinner last year, it's really caught on. It's really caught on. He's mad about that. But he's also, remember, Trump is strategically using this to take jabs at the NFL because he still got beef with the NFL. And he's also using this to take jabs at black people because he can't, because he's a first-class bitch, right? He has also been criticized recently for questioning the intelligence of several notable African Americans, including Don Lemon and Maxine Waters. The tweets come amid rising racial tensions on the anniversary of last year's violent Charlottesville white supremacist rally, where Heather Hare, a counter protester, was killed. On Sunday, white nationalists and other right wing groups are expected to gather outside the White House for another white bullshit rally. So, bullshit ass Donald Trump mad.
I don't know why these players keep on taking knees. America's the greatest it has ever been, in my eyes, even though I'm not even looking out of my eyes. I'm looking out of my asshole. Yep, I see through my asshole. That's why I see nothing. But I'm smarter than what you niggas think. You know I'm smarter than what you niggas give me. You niggas don't give me the credit, but I'm smarter than that.
Trump, remember, Trump ain't all the way stupid. Trump playing his role the way he's supposed to play his role. He did. But fuck you, Donald Trump, and everything you stand for. And don't nobody give a damn that you mad. And people going to keep, the players going to keep protesting. Players need to protest, but what needs to happen is we need to start our own league. That's what needs to happen. Black people starting their own football league and not giving the NFL a chance to fuck them over.
You did.
Because I did. So, the NFL is pondering a rule called the T.O. rule for the Hall of Fame. So, let's learn about this potential T.O. rule. Right? I want to know. Say, more than a decade ago, an injury to Terrell Owens forced a change to the rules of the NFL, which is the horse collar rule, which means you can't bring the player down by the back of his jersey, back of his shoulder pads, and yank him down and fall on his legs. You can't do that no more. Terrell Owens, his leg was broke. So Terrell Owens forced a change to the rules. Now an insult to T.O. could force a change to the rules of the Hall of Fame. Let's see what this means. So, per multiple sources, the Hall of Fame currently is considering a requirement that candidates for enshrinement commit to showing up for the Hall of Fame enshrinement ceremony before the selection committee makes its final choices. As one source explained it, the issue became a hot topic on Friday in Canton during the annual Ray Nitschke luncheon attended only by the members of the Hall of Fame. Most strongly disagreed with Terrell Owens' decision to boycott this weekend's festivity.
Who cares?
Some supported Owens. That's right. Most, if not all, agreed that it is important to stop Owens' boycott of ceremony from becoming a trend. Hey, don't do no fuck shit. We'll have to worry about that. Hall of Famers want advanced screening of the candidates along with the commitment that they will show up. The plan, as another source put it, would consist of having the 25 semifinalists sign an agreement that they will show up if selected. That's funny. They currently believe that the adjustment to the procedures is virtually certain to happen. Three obvious questions arise. First, what happens if the semifinalists refuse to sign a document? Presumably, the person automatically will not become one of the 15 finalists, thereby preventing the members of the selection committee from voting the candidate in. Some whole shit. Which is some whole shit. Put the pressure on the T.O. That's what I'm talking about. Put the pressure on the T.O. Second, what happens if the person signs the document, wins enshrinement, and then doesn't show up? Would the Hall of Fame member be replaced by an alternate, or would the bronze bust still be added to the Hall of Fame in the new enshrinee's absence? Third, and perhaps most importantly, is the Hall of Fame willing to change its bylaws to permit consideration for the induction to stray beyond events and dynamics unrelated to the candidate's football career? If an inclination to not attend the ceremony becomes a factor in keeping someone out of Canton, what about other things that are supposedly off limits when it comes to screening Hall of Fame? Right. The best approach could be to regard the TO situation as a once in 318 aberration and to continue with the same rules that otherwise would have applied. Indeed, Owens didn't show up, but he's still a Hall of Famer. It wouldn't be fair to any other potential Hall of Famer to apply a different set of rules to apply. Right. It would also be wrong to ignore Owens' point. Right. Let's talk about that, right? He was indeed passed over not once but twice for reasons unrelated to his accomplishments, which was some whole shit by some grown-ass people, right? The fact that Owens and Randy Moss generally are regarded as the second and third or third and second best receivers of all time behind Jerry Rice, coupled with the fact that Moss got in on the first try, proves that Owens also should have gotten in on the first try. Right. So instead of creating a litmus test that violates the letter and spirit of the Hall of Fame's bylaws for enshrining, the current members of the Hall of Fame should instead recognize the merit of T.O.'s argument and consider revamping the selection process to ensure that another first ballot Hall of Famer isn't made to wait for reasons other than things that he did on the field. Right. Stop with the whole shit. Like I said earlier, the players that we grew up watching and enjoying, they ain't got no backbone. They yellow belly. They don't take stands. Only time they'll take a stance, probably if it's about their personal wealth. But they don't take stands. Like, T.O. was fucked over. And I think T.O. did the right thing. Take a stand. When somebody trying to fuck you over, you take a stand. You don't sit there and let people fuck you over. You just don't do that. And anybody who would let just, if you would let just anybody just do that to you, you crazy. I don't know what's wrong with you. Why would you do that? But I don't have a problem with what T.O. did, and I agree with this article, man. T.O., the players in the Hall of Fame in that Radnitsky dinner should have been discussing why T.O. did that and why he shouldn't have had to do that. He should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer. And the fact that he wasn't, he had to wait 3 years to get in, is straight bullshit. So I do not have a problem with what T.O. did. And I think any grown man who does, hey, man, you need to look at yourself in the mirror and stop buck dancing for these folks. Take the white gloves off and stop buck dancing for the NFL. Like, you don't, y'all don't owe the NFL a damn thing. Y'all don't owe the Hall of Fame a damn thing. Y'all don't owe these writers a damn thing. I know a lot of y'all players got a love affair or a love fest with a lot of these organizations and these people who y'all claim change our lives, but y'all got to understand, man, if you didn't have the talent that helped them make money, they wouldn't even know your black heads. Stop with all that, man. Stop. Y'all, I'm not disappointed because I've come to the realization that those people, those athletes that we grew up watching, that just when it comes to social issues, man, they just ain't got it. They just don't have it. And things won't change if nobody takes a stand. You got to take a stand in order to get changed sometimes. You got to do something different. You got to do something out of the ordinary. You got to do something drastic. Not necessarily drastic, but it's best to do something calculated and organized. But don't let nobody step on you and do you wrong. Don't, especially if you know you've been done wrong. Like, T.O. know he did. Everybody know he was done wrong. But like, yeah, man, but still, other people waited their turn. That's because they ain't had the heart to stand up. And that's because a lot of those people, their argument wasn't as good as T.O.'s. T.O. really shouldn't have had to argue shit because his resume spoke for itself. If you have to be argued as the second or third best receiver of all time, you've motherfucking first ballot Hall of Fame. And that's all I got to say about that. T.O., we with you right here on the fix. All right, so the Alliance of American Football is coming soon. So they're saying the AAF, that's what they call it, the Alliance of American Football is the AAF, is different from leagues that have come before. So a television film producer and Hall of Fame NFL exec punished pancakes in a dinner outside of a Cape Cod and discussed how to make the Monday after the Super Bowl less sad. This is how a football league is born. If you can raise the money, it's viable. Bill Polian told Charlie Ebersole during a five-hour meeting last summer. Ebersole, the league CEO and son of former NBC Sports chairman Dick Ebersole, started working the phones and developing the business plan. Tech companies and former NFL stars got behind the product. Polian, who is staying in his role as an NFL analyst for ESPN, helped assemble personnel and coaching staffs with nearly 500 years of combined NFL experience. A year later, the Alliance of American Football has a February 9, 2019 launch date, a CBS contract, a starter apparel deal, and an 8-city blueprint, scheduled combines, a set of double-take football rules, and 73-year-old Steve Spurrier. Hot damn it. The vision is clear. Keep the good times flowing in the late winter and spring with the lead run by serious football people while learning from the failed attempts that came before it. If it's good football, it would sell itself, said Bill Polian. The road to professional football alongside the NFL is littered with potholes. The USFL failed because it tried to overtake the NFL more than 30 years ago, defined by more lawsuits and undercut potential than its once star-studded rosters. The XFL faded because efforts to sell sex, excessive violence, and wrestling-like personalities didn't resonate with viewers, though Vince McMahon is eyeing a 2020 XFL reboot. Told y'all about that. Even the CFL isn't true competition, or isn't a true compliment, rather. But the Alliance has NFL people who care about the NFL's well-being. It's not a farm system, but it might involve shades of an NBA G League. Our objective is to take some of those people who can't quite make it and make them qualify and make them quality NFL players, Polian said. And the NFL wants on-the-bubble players to get reps elsewhere, Polian said. The Chicago Bears recently gave Phoenix general manager Phil Savage a list of prospects for him to watch closely during a scouting trip to Illinois. Since NFL Europe expired 10 years ago, there's been a real desire and frustration by NFL personnel people that there's a missing link as far as developmental type lead for prospects that weren't quite ready, said Savage, former general manager of the Cleveland Browns and Super Bowl director. The development will be crucial. Players cut from NFL teams in late August and early September will compose much of the Alliance rosters. The NFL must trim training camp rosters from 90 to 53, and many of these guys can play. The Alliance offers a three-year, $250,000 player contract that includes an out clause if they get another crack at the NFL. There's bonus money for everything from marketing to public appearances, which is where bigger name players, perhaps accomplished NFL veterans, muscle out of the game can make good side coin. Consider the New Orleans Saints backup Taysom Hill, who won't play behind Drew Brees, but could be the face of the Alliance franchise for a year or two. Pittsburgh has three backups, Landry Jones, Josh Dobbs, and Mason Rudolph, fighting for two spots behind Ben Roethlisberger. That's a potential battle the Alliance will likely follow. Free agent Dez Bryant is out of reach, but receivers Harry Douglas and Lewis Murphy might not be. Here's some other things you need to know about the Alliance. Names and locations. That's in bold letters. Polian realizes a little star power will help. I hope we can get Trent Richardson in Birmingham, Polian said. If Tim Tebow decides to play football, I hope we get him. Those are great names. Tim Tebow will help push the needle and get people involved and see what's going on because it's Tim Tebow. And if the league opts for flashy Texas-bred single signal callers with baggage, there's always Vince Young and Johnny Manziel, and even though Johnny Manziel can't play in Canada. The league will tailor rosters around regional appeal for its teams in Atlanta, Birmingham, Memphis, Orlando, Phoenix, San Antonio, San Diego, and Salt Lake City. Expect that Birmingham team to be well-stocked with former Crimson Tide stars, for example. Atlanta will go hard for Auburn. Just check its Twitter recruiting game. The hashtag Alliance ATL could be a great opportunity for Michael Dye. He started his college career at Auburn, where he was a freshman All-American and the MVP of the 2011 BCS National Championship. So the Alliance plans to use star personnel talent to discover its next Kurt Warner, the former Arena League star quarterback who threw his way into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, or the next Adam Vinatieri, even though there's no kickoff. So just a little information on that. You go to ESPN.com to learn more about that, or just Google the Alliance of American Football, and, you know, you'll learn more about that. So there'll be football after the NFL season that can carry us back into the NFL season, which will be a developmental league for players who are not, who may be good enough to be on NFL rosters, but may not have a spot on rosters, or players who may not be good enough to be on NFL rosters, but still are good players, just not NFL players, but are still better than Canadian League players. So there it is. So look out for that. The Alliance of American Football is coming soon. And when, what the date said, what did that date say? February 9th, 2019 is the expected launch date. So look out for that. So college basketball is changing their rules, and it's because of the NFL probes that happened. I mean, the FBI probes in the NCAA basketball. So college athletics, specifically college basketball, is getting a significant rule book makeover. The FBI's investigation into the sport's crooked recruiting practices is primarily why. The NCAA announced on Wednesday widespread sweeping changes to college basketball's bylaws, its recruiting calendar, and an evolutionary step forward in legislation that gives more entitlements to student athletes. Good. The biggest changes are as follows. All players who get invited to the NBA combine but go undrafted will have an option to return to their former school. That's good. Elite prospects will now be allowed to have official relationships with agents. This applies to high schoolers and college athletes alike. USA Basketball, in conjunction with the NCAA, will be tasked with identifying which prospects in a given class are elite. In regard to high school athletes, however, the rules will not go into effect until the NBA changes the current age limit rule, which they need to go ahead and change that bitch now. The NCAA is requiring all school presidents, chancellors, and athletic staff members to contractually comply with an all-for future investigation. This is the NCAA's way of trying to institute a de facto version of subpoena power, which is lacked previously. School presidents and chancellors will now personally be held accountable by the NCAA for the athletic departments abiding by the rules. The FBI's case into college basketball brought about mounds of documents of information. Previously, the NCAA did not allow for information and findings from outside investigations and established agencies to be used in this infractions process. Effective immediately, the NCAA and its Committee on Infractions can use information obtained in other probes as a means to an end for its own investigation. This will be implemented immediately by the NCAA, with the schools currently caught up in the Department of Justice's case regarding multiple schools and alleged violations of multiple federal laws. The recruiting calendar is getting a major overhaul. In a first, college coaches will be allowed to attend the NBA Players Association Top 100 camp each June. Also, the first live period of July will be attendable for non-scholastic events. Other changes include harsher punishments, such as postseason bans on programs that can last up to 5 years, potential lifetime show causes for level one violations from coaches, and suspensions from head coaches that can last more than a year. Excuse me. The alterations to the NCAA rulebook come at a time when the very nature of college athletics and what should constitute the ideas of amateur athletics are continually being challenged. In the past decade, there has been growing sentiment that college athletes should be able to benefit financially of their image and likeness, but Wednesday's set of reforms did not address that issue, which I have been saying for years. The new bylaws mark the first official changes to the NCAA rulebook in men's Division I basketball since last year's FBI bombshell rocked the sport. When that happened, NCAA President Mark Emmert vowed there would be swift and significant change. Wednesday's news marks the start of the change. Many of the changes unveiled Wednesday were previously detailed by CBS Sports. Most of these amendments to the rulebook are in coordination with recommendations that were made in April by the Commission on College Basketball, which is chaired by Condoleezza Rice. Oh, yeah, whoopee. Changes come to a lot of anticipation and skepticism among the coaching community. Nevertheless, because of the bad publicity to change to college basketball, an overhaul of the recruiting model is inevitable. This week, we delivered on a promise made just months ago to make profound and meaningful changes to college basketball. The NCAA said on behalf of its joint leaders in a statement, ultimately these decisions will support the success of student athletes both on and off the court. Yeah, we will see. It still ain't allowing the players to earn off their likeness and their name. But rules have been changed, and they're trying to slow down on not getting money, basically. Basically what that comes down to. So, yeah. 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 So let's talk about mental health, because like I said, every August for the Freedom Train Network, it's Mental Health Awareness Month, and just because this is a sports show doesn't mean we're going to ignore mental health, because we're directly looking at bringing more awareness to the mental health, to mental health awareness in the black community, and improving the mental health awareness and the mental health process, and black people get more mental health, right? So talking about the connections between concussions, CET, and mental health issues. Football may be a favorite national pastime for most Americans, but professional NFL players often have to deal with the physical toll that the sport can take on them. Football players usually experience repeated traumatic head injuries that can affect their body and brain. Recently, researchers have discovered that concussions and brain trauma, which are common in the game, can actually lead to severe mental health issues as players age. There have been instances of mental health problems in former NFL players that made headlines. Junior Seau, a former player for the San Diego Chargers, committed suicide in 2012, and his autopsy revealed the brain disease called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. CTE. It's a progressive degenerative brain disease that has been found in a large number of former NFL players and boxers. CTE is caused by repetitive brain trauma, including concussions, that begin to trigger progressive degeneration of brain tissue. The disease often leads to symptoms such as memory loss, confusion, impaired judgment, aggression, depression, suicide, suicidal thoughts or actions, dementia. Unfortunately, because of the effects of CTE, Seau's suicide could have been directly related to the concussions he experienced while playing football. Seau's depression is not an isolated incident. Former Philadelphia Eagles star Andre Waters committed suicide in 2006 at the age of 44. His autopsy revealed his brain had so much damage it resembled an 85-year-old man with Alzheimer's disease. Waters' head injuries throughout his career most likely contributed to his depression and severe brain damage. So clinical depression and brain trauma, let's talk about that, right? So according to this article, in a 2007 study, by the Center for the Study of Retired Athletes surveyed former NFL players who received multiple concussions throughout their career. Those with three or more concussions were three times more likely to develop clinical depression than those who had never received concussions. They were also five times more likely to develop mild cognitive impairment. Concussions occur when a sudden impact jostles the brain, causing it to hit the surrounding skull or rotate unnaturally. Short-term effects of a concussion include memory loss, unconsciousness, nausea, and slurred speech. A person may be able to recover easily from a single concussion, but repeated concussions, which are common for football players, Luke Kuechly, can lead to several neurological damage. Many former NFL players who suffer from depression are found to have notable abnormalities in their brain, in their brain's white matter. Inside the brain, white matter is critical for transmitting signals, and concussions can cause some of the connections within it to tear. Studies have shown a strong correlation between players with depression and white matter damage. Former NFL players and their mental health, that's the boldness. Although there seems to be an increased risk of brain damage and depression among NFL players, it is not always the case that concussions cause these issues. There are a number of retired players who have had no problems with mental health, such as Troy Aikman of the Dallas Cowboys, who suffered an astonishing total of 10 concussions over 12 seasons. In spite of these extensive injuries, Aikman is often in front of the camera and has not suffered any mental health issues that we know of. The statistics, however, generally seem to confirm that there is a strong correlation between repeated brain trauma and mental health issues in former players. About 22% of players who have received multiple concussions have experienced a bout of depression compared to only 6 or 7% among those with no concussions. Depression related to concussions tends to occur and older retired players as they reach their 50s and 60s. Injuries and recovery. Anytime a player experiences a concussion, it is best to keep them out of play until it has fully healed to avoid issues like second impact syndrome. This is an illness that develops when a second concussion occurs before the first one has properly healed. Second impact syndrome can be life-threatening, can be a life-threatening condition, so it's important for players to be clear about position before they return to play the game. So I know a lot of these OG players probably got second impact. The second impact syndrome. It can also be helpful for football players to receive testing following every concussion they receive to determine if there have been any damage. A newer cognitive test, such as an impact test, it says IM capital PACT test prior to the season, can serve as a baseline test of an athlete's neurocognitive abilities. If players receive a concussion, they can be removed from play and tested for any damage or changes in their abilities. New helmet technology currently in the works could eventually help to reduce the number of concussions that occurs in the game. Studies in the field of concussion rehabilitation could also help treat these injuries more effectively to prevent long-term damage. A better understanding of how concussions happen in the sport and the best methods for treating them could help improve the outlook for NFL players for the future. Now, how that relates to our community, the amount of black men or black boys who are funneled into football who are taking these head injuries, who are having these head injuries, having these concussions, and black America not taking its mental health care seriously. So you can have we could potentially have a number of black men in our community who have mental health issues due to continuous head trauma and concussions that nobody is really even knowing about. So they may be harming themselves or others, and nobody even is really considering that it could be caused by the CTE. So I want us to look, as I keep saying, look, take a look and really, really analyze our reasoning and our justification and the methods that we go about using to incorporate or indoctrinate young black men into the system of football in America. I know a lot of young men get into football or athletics period because they want to save their family. But is failed mental health or mental health issues that go untreated, is that worth that child saving the family? Because the family can be saved just by using their brain. They don't have to use somebody's athletic prowess to save the family. They can use their brain. So CTE is real, and a lot of black players get concussions. A lot of black men are walking around with degenerative brains because of the injuries that they've suffered, the concussions that they've suffered, and not even knowing, and having mental health issues and illnesses and episodes that's affecting the way they exist within their communities, and they could be labeled as a nuisance or a problem within their communities, which could lead to them being killed by the police or just even shunned by the community and becoming homeless and not being able to sustain themselves. So I think all those things need to be looked at and questioned and pondered on when we are talking about putting our sons in specifically football to save the family. Or even if the kid just wants to play football, understand the mental health risk that the children are taking. I'm not mad at moms for not putting their kids in football, even though I do have the throwback mentality. I like to hit, and I like to see people get knocked the hell out, but still the smart man in me understands that we're going to need our brains because we're going to need as many healthy functioning brains as possible to remove ourselves from this system of white supremacy. So mental health awareness in the black community. Let's stay on. Let's get on. Let's stay on. Remember, www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about mental health and how we are celebrating it on the Freedom Train Network. All right. So the Las Vegas Aces, they cancel the game. A game was canceled, and they will have to forfeit the game and take an L that the NBA told them. So let's talk about that. Let's read about it. Let's get this thing to move, though. Let's move with me. Move with me. Move with me. So for the first time in WNBA history, a team has forfeited a game. And this is the expansion team. This is Las Vegas Aces' first year in the WNBA. League rule Tuesday that the Las Vegas Aces would get a loss for their game against the Washington Mystics that was canceled when the Aces players decided not to play because of concerns about their health and safety after more than 25 hours of travel. The Aces needed more than a day to get to Washington from Las Vegas because of the flight delays and cancellations. By the time the team reached its hotel, it was 3:45 p.m. Friday, about 4 hours before the scheduled tip-off. Oh, hell no. I don't blame them. The Aces player talked things over and spoke by phone with the union Friday to call the league to say that they did not want to play. The league said it worked extensively with both teams to find a workable solution. The WNBA added it delayed the start of the game until 8 p.m. to give the Aces as much time as possible for their next arrival. What about the next day's shift? While not ideal, it was the best available solution to accommodate both our fans and our scheduling challenges. WNBA President Lisa Borda said in a statement, since the Aces chose not to play, the results are important. The Aces put out a statement right before the start of the game Tuesday night in Atlanta. Our entire organization had the utmost respect for the very difficult decision our players made, and we stand with them, said Bill Laimbeer, the Aces president of basketball operations and coach. We are disappointed with the league's decision, but our focus is now on winning as many games as we can in our drive for our first playoff appearance. Las Vegas went on to lose to the Dream 100-109, giving them two losses on the day. The team is 12-17, which fell 2.5 games behind the Dallas Wings for the final playoff spot. Didn't really want to talk about the league's decision after the game. That's in the past, said guard Caleb McBride. We made that decision as a team the other day. We're here now, and we're focused on Atlanta. It is what it is. We stand by our decision. There was little precedent for the decision because WNBA has never before canceled the game. There have only been a handful of instances over the past few decades in major sports in which the team has had to forfeit. So, yeah, they could have rearranged something. They could have rescheduled that game to a later date or something like that. They didn't have to try to force the ladies to play like that because they weren't going to be fresh after like that. That's messed up. I think it's kind of messed up. They could have rescheduled that game. They really could have rescheduled that game. They didn't. I understand they pushed the time back, but they could have rescheduled that game and allowed the ladies to get that. So in the future, you got to change the way travel is had and get in. You're coming from one coast to the next. Get them at least a day to get their legs up under them and be ready to play. If you want some high quality basketball, that's what I say. That's kind of messed up that they got to take that L because of that. They think about their safety. So then that gives them two losses in like a day or two. So now they got to really fight because they're 12-17 trying to get to the playoffs. That's messed up. That's messed up. It's that bullshit. So, let's move on. That's kind of messed up. That's very messed up, but let's move on. So, Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton, right? Remember I told you Kelvin Benjamin sent out the tweet or the Instagram post talking about he shouldn't have been drafted by the Panthers. He wasn't a good fit. Cam Newton wasn't a good quarterback. Remember, nobody has ever said Cam Newton was an accurate quarterback. Cam Newton is, however, a good quarterback, but he's not an accurate quarterback. Cam Newton is not the best passer. Cam Newton probably has only had, out of 8-9 seasons, probably only had 2 seasons where he's above 60, maybe 70% passing. So he's not the most accurate passer, but Cam Newton did have his MVP season the year that Kelvin Benjamin was hurt. And Kelvin Benjamin basically, you know, I went in on Kelvin because I felt that Kelvin he's not taking responsibility or accountability for his own actions or lack of action there was. Because Kelvin Benjamin, I agree, I didn't like that draft pick either, Kelvin Benjamin going to the Panthers. I remember Kelvin Benjamin from Florida State, and Kelvin Benjamin, he's lazy. He's a lazy, overweight player. And now Kelvin Benjamin seems like he ain't no man. Put it like this. So the preseason game I was telling y'all about earlier, right? Cam spotted KD on the other side of the field talking to Thomas Davis. So Cam walked over. Now, I agree with Chris Carter. I was watching, you know, the First Take and all this stuff this morning, and Cam Newton didn't have to make contact with Kelvin Benjamin with his body. It was kind of bumping his body, but it was kind of a playful thing because Cam Newton kind of went up, kind of, you know, joking and playing with him, whatever. And see, that's what it seemed like to me. That's what from the video that I saw, seemed like he was playing with him and tried to, you know, shake his hand and all these things. And KB it's all in his feelings and things. So Cam Newton told Thomas Davis to go away, and it seemed like Cam put his hands behind his back, and then they went talking about things, but Kevin Benjamin didn't really want to talk to him. He waved them off and walked away. And then Kevin ain't in the interview, ain't really nothing to talk about. We ain't got nothing to talk about. I ain't want to talk to him and all these things. And it's like, man, on the strength of just some manhood shit, if you call somebody out and that person is walking up to you trying to talk things out, because at least Cam ain't come off to me like no bitch boy or like he was trying to be immature and things. Like, he genuinely like, all right, man, let's talk this out. Or let's have a conversation about this. Kevin Benjamin didn't. Kevin Benjamin is not only lazy, he don't run good routes, his hands aren't that good, he can't create separation, his conditioning is horrible. I don't think he's going to have a very productive season in Buffalo, because the main reason is quarterback situation ain't that good. But another reason is him. But I just think Kevin Benjamin need to grow the fuck up. I just do. I really think Kevin Benjamin need to grow the fuck up. And I think one of the reasons why Kevin Benjamin is in Buffalo now, and he was traded from Carolina, because he need to grow the fuck up. He's a little boy. He handles things like a little boy. And, you know, I mean, he ain't got no heart, man. He ain't got no heart, because he said what he said behind the keyboard. Now, he also knew that the Buffalo game was coming up. He knew that the ball game was coming up against the Panthers. He knew that because they've been practicing for it. So, you know, kind of, you know, I don't think he expected Cam to approach him about it, but Cam did approach him about it. And, yes, Cam didn't have to bump in with his body, but I'm not mad at Cam for approaching KB to talk it out, especially when we talk about it as a man. But KB want to act like a little bitch. I'm like, man, you know, push him off. He don't want to talk about it. And I just think Kevin Benjamin need to grow the fuck up. One of the reasons why I say that is because even now, we need our black NFL players to all be on one page, on one accord, in unison, and in harmony, at least in public, having a united front, a vision of united front against what's going on with the NFL trying to stifle their rights to be able to protest. This time now more than ever, black players in the NFL need to be getting along. They need to be in harmony. They need to be united. You don't have to agree on everything. You don't have to like each other. But what you do need to have is a united front against white supremacy. That's what NFL players need now. And it's disappointing when somebody like Kevin Benjamin, who didn't have to make the statements that he made the other day or last week, he didn't have to make those statements, because the statements was bitch made. And he didn't tell us anything that we didn't know. Everybody knew, and everybody already knows, that Cam Newton ain't accurate. When we talk about Cam Newton, guess what? Guess which attribute we don't mention? Accuracy. Why? Because his ass ain't accurate. After 8 to 9 years in the league, Cam Newton still ain't one of the most accurate passers in the league, but Cam Newton is one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's top 10, top 15 quarterback in the league. He is. He has the talent. I think they say, if you go back and look at it, Cam Newton's first 5 years, we just talking about historically, Cam Newton's first 5 years versus Joe Montana's first 5 years. I mean, you know. But Kevin Benjamin, I'm very disappointed in you. I would snap on you, but for what? I'm very disappointed. I think you need to grow up. I think you need to get people in your life to teach you how to be a man. And, I mean, I'm not mad at you for standing by your statements, but your statements were bitch made, uncalled for, and it makes you look like a hoe. And after this situation on the field with Cam Newton, you look like even bigger hoe, because you don't even want to talk it out. You don't even want to come to a reconciliation about what's going on. You're like, man, fuck this nigga, man. I'm going to talk to this nigga, man. Fuck this nigga, man. Kevin Benjamin, grow the fuck up, man. Grow the fuck up. None of your actions are justified. You look like a big hoe right now. You look like a big 6'5", 6'6", overweight hoe who can't run routes. That's what you look like. I'm hoping that's not you, but that's what you look like right now. And like I said, it's disappointing, because right now we need black men in the NFL to be on a united front, standing against white supremacy, not beefing with each other. Put your goddamn beef to the side and get united and stand against white supremacy and protect your rights as fucking NFL players. That's why people be looking at y'all NFL players like y'all crazy. But at the same time, remember, situation that Cam and KB going through is a microcosm of the larger situation that happens within Black America. Because black people in America will bicker over some of the dumbest shit at some of the worst times. So let's do better. Let's do better. Now, y'all know what time it is. It's time for the weekly rant. Let's get it. Now, it's time for the weekly rant. Get it. Now, all right, so 13 University of North Carolina football players have been suspended for selling team-issued shoes. So let's dig into this before we go off, before we rant, and before we talk about all this, you know. 13 North Carolina football players will be suspended for at least one game and as many as four games during this coming season as the program details the fallout of a secondary NCAA violations of fallout of secondary NCAA violations regarding the sale of team-issued shoes. Well, why were they selling the shoe? I am certainly upset by our players' actions and how their choices reflect on them. Our program and the university, UNC coach Larry Fedora said in a statement, these young men knew the rules and are being held responsible for the poor choices they made. But why did they make those choices? 9 of 13 suspended players will miss four games, the most notable being sophomore quarterback Chaz Surratt, the team leader last season in passing yards per attempt and completion percentage. Surratt has been entrenched in the competition for the starting job with junior Nathan Elliott. Well, hey, Nathan is starting for at least four games, right? Another pair, defensive backs Trey Shaw and Greg Ross, will miss two games, the quarterback Jack Davidson and offensive lineman Jonah Melton will each miss one game. So these are all the names. So this is a what's this say? This is a tweet by Bridget Cundon. Chapel Hill, after self-reporting a secondary NCAA violation involving the sale of team-issued shoes, 13 North Carolina football players will miss games during 2018 season. Offensive lineman Brian Anderson, defensive end Malik Kearney, wide receiver Bo Corals, defensive end Tomlin Fox, defensive end Tyrone Hopper, offensive lineman Quiron Johnson, linebacker Malik Robinson, quarterback Chaz Surratt, and offensive lineman Jordan Tucker will each sit out four games. Defensive backs Greg Ross, Trey Shaw will miss two games, and quarterback Jack Davidson, and offensive lineman Jonah Melton will miss one. Because multiple players share the same position, the NCAA approved UNC's request to stagger a few suspensions to protect the health and safety of the students, according to a university release. Defensive end Malik Kearney will sit out matchups against East Carolina, number 23 Central Florida, Pittsburgh, and number 17 Virginia Tech. For example, while fellow defensive end Tomlin Fox will miss games against Miami, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech. Kearney is a preseason All-ACC contender, and Fox, a sophomore, is viewed as one of the league's top young talents on the defensive line. We are disappointed, Athletic Director Bubba Cunningham said. We always will strive to get better. Fresh off a highly disappointing 2017, UNC opened the 2018 season on September 1st with a game against California. So, all right, this article really didn't get into the who, what, where, when, why, so I'm going to just speculate. So, yes, the players were wrong, but were the players really wrong? Because, you know, like we talked about earlier, players are not able to really earn off their likeness and names and things. And sometimes players do things to get money. Because, hey, who don't want to get money? Everybody want money. They see these coaches with these millions of dollars, see these athletic directors, everybody who's involved in athletics getting money, and these players ain't getting money. Yes, players know the rules. Players, don't do dumb shit to hurt your chances. Don't do dumb shit to hurt your futures. Don't do dumb shit to hurt your teams. Because that's what y'all players did. So I got to mention that. But at the same time, NCAA and these schools, stop creating the environments that set up these type of actions. You all create these environments. These players ain't getting money. These players ain't getting paid. These players are poor. And y'all say, well, these players ain't really, man, these players are poor. You can't be a head coach making $5 to $10 million, and your players are doing all the work,
people not coming to see the coach. They're coming to see the kids play, and the players are not even receiving 1% of the revenue that they're bringing in. But at the same time, the players do have to make better decisions that don't negatively impact the team as a whole and their futures as a whole, because now all of these players will have a black mark on their resumes, and people will look at them as if something is wrong with them, when, in my opinion, I could be wrong, but in my opinion, these players are merely trying to survive, trying to make it to the next day, trying to put money in their pocket in a capitalistic system which they're being capitalized off of. Right? So it's like it's a lose-lose situation for these players, because you want money, you need money, you have limited ways to make money because of the contracts and things that you're under from the NCAA and the universities. So when you do things like sell team-issued shoes, which they shouldn't have done, I will acknowledge that, they shouldn't have sold team-issued shoes. But in my opinion, which I could be wrong, they sold the shoes because they need money, and they are in institutions where they're seeing all these other people making money off of their talent. Like, let's just be real. They see these people in these institutions making money off their talent, and now the players are being punished because the environments that they're in. These environments are capitalistic environments that are set up to rape these players for as much as they can. And it's up to these players to take their futures into their own hands. Unfortunately, the way the rules are written, when a player tries to enhance him or herself, an athlete in the NCAA, usually, especially if they're talking about financial enhancement, usually they're met with punishment. You can't sell this. You can't sell that. You would get suspended if you sell a picture of yourself. You would get suspended if you sell your autograph, i.e. Johnny Manziel, which was bullshit. Now, I do admit, don't sell team-issued shoes. That's not smart. You're not trying to help yourself. But at the same time, NCAA and these universities, y'all fucked up for creating these fucked-up environments that these players got to have to exist in. And when they're existing in these goddamn environments, we know that they are financially strapped. They don't have the cachet that a lot of people try to make us believe that they do. These players are not getting what they're worth. If fucking Nick Saban can get paid $10 million at Alabama, you know how you could pay? You want to know how you could pay them players? Take $5 million away from Nick Saban. You take $5 million out of Nick Saban's salary, because his ass do not deserve to get paid no $10 million to coach no goddamn football. But hey, I'm not mad at him. I'm not mad at him for getting it. And I do understand why he's getting it, because hell, the market can do it. It can do it. They can do it. They have the means to do it. Remember, I'm not opposed to people getting what they are worth within their field. Is Nick Saban worth $10 million? As a football coach, yes. Is Nick Saban worth $10 million as a football coach at the expense of these players not being able to get paid because, hell, you got to give the money to somebody? Hell no. No coach is worth that. And these coaches know that they shouldn't be worth that, because one of the things that these coaches sell these players on is that loyalty shit, so these coaches can ensure job security. It's all, at the end of the day, for a lot of them, about job security. Because they're getting paid. They're getting mad money, B. They're getting those chips, B. They're getting them ducats, B. So before we turn our nose up at these players, let's try to understand the total situation. They are in environments that are created to rape them and capitalize off of the money that they take from these players. And these players, I mean, a lot of them are victims. These players in this situation, they did wrong, but they have fallen victim to the system that they are in, that they signed up to be in, that their parents helped them sign up to be in, created that mindset. Hey, this is where you need to be. You have to play football. Once again, going back, you know, a lot of those players black. All of them weren't black. But, you know, a good number of those players are black, or maybe half of those players are black. Think about how that affect everybody. Some of those players, it's going to hurt. It's really going to hurt them long term. Some of them it won't. So we got to, in the black community specifically, we got to better prepare our players and our athletes to exist in the NCAA world. I don't particularly have a problem with players taking money and selling stuff like that, but you can't get mad when you get popped by the rules when you know the rules. But at the same time, why do they got these fucked up rules? And that'd be my beef. That's why I'd be ranting, because the environments are created to capitalize off these players, and as soon as these players try to capitalize off of the things that they feel like they can capitalize off of, it's a problem. But you got to be smart when you're a capitalist as well, because the system isn't designed for the players to win in that manner. So the players, if you're trying to win in a manner outside of the rules, you got to be smart about what you're doing. Hey, man, I'm Joseph Ward. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. Oh, yeah, shout out to my dog, Caleb Davis, for sending me that story about the Football Alliance. Shout out to Caleb, man. I appreciate that, big homie. Hey, man. Shout out to my homie Doc Love too. So they're my homeboys, man. Shout out to Javard Grant, Chimo Unwanley, Muhammad Mujahid, Edwin Bennett, the boys out there in Cali doing their thing. Shout out to Mad Dog down there in Miami. Shout out to Shani Floyd up in Atlanta doing his thing. Shout out to Amani Floyd. Shout out to, man, who else, man? My dog Mike G. My dog Mike Gaston just won. Say a big shout out. Hold on, I want to give a round of applause. I want to give a round of applause to my dog Mike Gaston. Round of applause. Yeah, big Mike. Mike G. That's time for Mike G. I gave Mike G a round of applause because Mike G just recently, he got himself into shape, and he recently entered a fitness competition and placed first in this category. He placed first, so that's why I gave Big Mike G the round of applause. Shout out to my dog John Alexander, Champ Pace, Marcus Audley, my dog Frog, my dog Luther, Skeet, my dog Skeet. All the homies, man. If I forgot your name, forgot to mention your name, ain't no foul play. Grip, Big Grip, Little Grip, shout out to all of them. Man, everybody that we came up with and everybody who's holding it down, I'm proud of my group of friends that I came up with. Shout out to Cam and Mike from the Nothing Above the Moon. I'm proud of the people I came. That's why I'm shouting my folk out, because I'm proud of the people who we weren't supposed to make it, and we here. And we make it, and we thrive, and we're moving forward. So with that being said, I am Joseph Ward. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. Two fingers in the air, living like a player.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
Hold on, ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless.